book referee of 25 years with Lobsang Rampa. About his, their adopted daughter who served as his secretary/typewriter. Sheila writes in the first part of the book of her life before she met Rampa, or Dr. Kuan, as was his legal name in the first time after the body changeover in 1949. She was seemingly from a very rich family, and came into contact with Dr. K as she lived in the same part of London in those days in 1955, where she was married and had two children. And as mentioned, she was of a rich family, and was also married to a relative rich husband, and they had money to have a housekeeper, Mrs. Dotwood, that also looked after the children. Sheila's hobby was painting with watercolors. An intellectual, Charles, was also a friend of her, who worked as a kind of boss at a dry museum, and it was Sheila's husband, John, who wrote a good suggestion letter that Rampa, or Dr. Kuan, who was very poor at the time, then brought to Charles at the museum. Well, it was the wife, Sheila, who had told her husband to write that letter in an attempt to help Rampa to get this job. And some time before this museum visit, she had as an impulse at a meeting, given him a gift of £500, which was a good sum of money at the time. He was very underprivileged, so he accepted it as a loan, but said he intended to give back the money at a later time. At the job searching meeting in the museum he worked, Charles became interested to hear more, when he heard of Rampa's life in Tibet, and among other things, their experimenting with man-lifting kites in their land. That was also because Charles had been writing a book on airplanes, or gliders at that time. And it was just then Charles who urged Rampa/Dr. Kuan, to write a book of his adventurous life, as they both knew it was almost impossible for a stranger or foreigner to get a job at that time. Especially for a man not longer young and vigorous, as Rampa or Dr. Kuan was. But at first he only rejected the proposal of book writing. But he had no other option, so when Charles invited him to join him at a meeting with a publisher, Rampa or Dr. Kuan went with him. The first meeting with the publisher, Mr. Dot Banks, went well, as this publisher was very eager in getting out a book written by a Tibetan Lama, about life in Tibet, a land the world knew very little about, though researchers worldwide were curious about it. But he had much to do, as he was reading incoming book manuscripts, and when Rampa some few weeks later gave him his first writings, Rampa only gave him relative short time to look them through. So under this pressure, this book man, Mr. Cecil Banks, immediately started to read the writings of this Tibetan, and was at once taken by its content. Some few weeks later he returned with the first complete chapter, and Sheila writes she couldn't understand how he was able to concentrate and write under those noisy circumstances in which he lived, where they and the poor neighbors in every direction, heard every sound or noise from all else, plus the clappering on the old typewriter of Rampa. This last made them knock in his walls, and from below, through his floor at all times. But he could seemingly hold it outside his mind, and went on writing. Well, she should read through it, and did not beforehand know what it said, but was immediately taken by its content when she started the reading. As she lived only 15 minutes walk from Rampa and wife, she often visited them in their poor and noisy living conditions. She at first was shocked to find such a poor quarter so near to her own home. Yes, how could he find peace and concentration to write under such conditions? The smell of mold was everywhere, and worn-out paint. But inside their room, the nice smell of incense was making a rather different atmosphere. But this was not the normal situation, only because of her visit had they burnt it, their one and only incense. Yes, they were very poor. Some time later Sheila was feeling sick, and though she did not tell Mr. Rampa this, he just felt it and expressed so. And he also asked to make an astrological study of her, which was done, when she had got the right time of birth from her mother. The book almost immediately became a success. At this time Sheila moved out of the house of her spouse, John, as she had need of more time for herself for a period. The children was placed by her mother, and she stayed most of her time by the Rampas, which by now at this time had become their official name, at least for him. His books had now been published in many years and made much commotion and interest worldwide. At this time Sheila also gave birth to her third child, a boy. But the mother instinct could not have been very strong, as she continued to stay away from her husband and to other children, but seemingly she had frequent contact to them. By this time they all moved to a furnished flat in Dublin, Ireland. It was one of the best time periods in Ireland's writing she mentioned. And here she also uses many words to describe uninteresting, insignificant, things in this book, as I evaluate it. About simultaneous he began more into the aura investigation, but they thought it was difficult to get new people to test it on. Preferably nude and young girls, as they have much brighter auras. But not so. The exposures was on long time settings she mentions, but they had problems getting sensitized film. The cameras then were not automatic, and Rampa was keen to get Sheila to learn how to operate them. By this time he dictated the books into a tape recorder, and she was typing them later. He dictated very clearly, she writes in the book. Sometimes they were told to not to speak for some minutes, when he received telepathic messages. And he often repeated to them, the middle way is the only way. If you are too good, you can't remain here, on earth, and it is never a good idea to be too bad, it catches up on you. They sometimes rented a car and drove out to Wicklow Mountains, picture below, or to the coast. She also talks about the jealousy between the two ladies in the Rampa family in this book, and the sometimes sarcastic commentaries from the old one of them. One occasion mentioned in this connection, was when he gave an old gold watch to the young of them. They lived in Nassau Street in Dublin by this time, she writes. See picture down from this time period, but people here are not connected with the book. At a time, after some downtime with Rampa wife, she went out and accidental so-called, met an old acquaintance from London, who after some talk tried to speak her away from her connection with the Rampas. But she rejected the invitation to leave them. Here is missing that part on the beach and picture of the little car, da-da-past-ast.pc I Hughes admit. At one time there, Sheila came back from a biking trip, when a lot of people were gathered outside their house, but she soon found out they were pressmen who were seeking more to write on, spinning rumors on the family. She bought a newspaper and read the wild invented things they wrote on them, and then she took a plane to London intending to clear things up, but soon found out it was little she could do in the situation then. She also writes that the often attacks from the press made him in continuous defense position, and not able to write from the heart after 3.I was published. They discussed the need to write a book of the process of transmigration or the body changeover, and in this book from Sheila, is written that the old lady in the house meant the world would not understand these things. But as we now know, the book on this was written. Regarding the books, here also says that only the first four was printed in hard covers, and the rest in soft covers or paperbacks as also called. And that they all had very good connections to that interested and then, new publisher. At a time, the house they rented was to be sold, and then they decided to move to Canada. That move happened Christmas 1959, when they moved to Windsor, a small city, Tecumseh, by the Lake St. Clair. A man they knew from the time in London, Paul, had found this house for them there. They stayed in that house for only some few months, before they moved to Windsor. They moved a lot, and was a time at Fort Erie. At that time a boy in England made suicide, and a book of Rampa was found by his bed, and when that came out, the press used this to blacken him and his books, which they saw as pure imagination. But this ill writing on him, made the book income to decrease and they had to live on much less money, and result also in similar more cheap and bad food. Here also mentions a temporary living place near the bridge leading to Buffalo. This living near this border bridge, made the police often suppose them for helping smugglers, and some police razzias in their house happened. They sometimes came into the house and harassed them, and took things they had not told the clearings on. Also the aura investigation things of Rampa was taken. She writes that a lot of books sold good in South America, as they were all translated into Spanish and Portuguese, but the Rampa family missed any royalties from the book sale from there. That was probably one of the reasons they accepted an invitation to visit, and move, to that continent. They went by cargo ship, that also took 12 passengers, as they had had bad experience on taking the cats on plane when they moved to Canada. That happened when the Cuba crisis went on, and therefore, they were the only passengers on that cargo ship. They were 3 weeks on the voyage, and Rampa dictated a book under this time, but the record machine and the tapes were stolen while at a harbor in Southam. By Christmas 1961 they came to Buenos Aires in Argentina. Later to Montevideo, which were planned as their home. Sheila liked the life there. There was made a form of study group around Rampa there, but it never really fit his situation. He wrote a book while being there, but he seemingly never felt quite at home there as Sheila did. So after some time, years, they returned to Canada, in spite of his resistance. On the return voyage they all three had many metaphysical talks. It was when they came back to Canada that he began to use a wheelchair, as said in this book. The hotel they stayed in first at coming back was called Press Court, at Niagara Highway. Next living stop was in New Brunswick, St. Joe, a hilly fishing town, before later moving to Montreal, which happened in -68 or in -69. She seemed to be unsure of the exact time for this move. But she remembers they rented a house built for the 1967 World Expo, and was empty when they moved into it. Their flat by the waterway was trafficked by a lot of ships, and Rampa had a map of ship signs he compared to those he saw on the ship's flags, and thus could see their origin. They all had a good and in some way luxury lifetime there at the Expo 67 flats, where he could wheelchair enclosed and in winter, warmed pavements. Sheila Ekema paid him on his partly long travels in this L wheelchair, she writes, she sometimes on bike. He liked to talk to common people they met. The name of those flats were the Habitat. One of the last moving for the family happened some years later, then to Vancouver and the Hotel West End – overlooking the English Bay. He had much spinal problems which hold them there for long. When he became some better they moved to Calgary in Alberta, but this time not near the water. Last in the book she writes on the breaking up of the connection. It happened when Rampa himself suggested she should stay with his wife also after his death. Sheila knew this to be impossible for her, as those two women were so different and only by his Dils Devils could it have continued so long. This book also say that Lobsang was Aries, astrological. That was the first time I've read any mention on that, and was just a thing I had thought about, but have understood that those initiated, as Rampa was, had a good balance of all the astrological signs.